This is Polling Matters. My name is Kieran Pedley, and I'm very excited today because we're going to be talking about betting and political betting, one of those things that a lot of people talk about, but maybe not many people understand, potentially. I'm joined, as ever, by Rob Vance. Hello, Rob.
Good to see you, Kieran.
Hopefully we'll get some tips today.
Yeah.
And also the head of odds political betting at Ladbrokes, Matt Shadding. Matt, welcome to Polling Matters.
Hi, Kieran. Pleasure to be here.
So, Matt, I mean, I know a little bit about betting, or I like to think I do. I mean, that's what most people say, I guess. But there'll be lots of people here that don't necessarily follow it very closely. So, I mean, talk us through a little bit about the types of bets you tend to get. You know, what are the different things that people can bet on in the election?
Okay, I mean, there are literally hundreds of different options for this election. I think the main market is probably going to revolve around which of the two main parties is going to end up with the most seats. Right now that looks incredibly close, so that's good for bookmakers when it's close like that. But you can bet on how many seats each of the parties will get, how well UKIP will do. And one of the main points of interest is we've got odds on every single constituency in the UK, excepting the Irish ones, which we'll have soon. And so you can have a bet wherever you live, whichever seat you're interested in, you can have a bet on any party that's standing there.
So what do you find the markets are saying at the moment? So you talked there a bit about who might get the most votes or the most seats, mm-hmm. and maybe you've got odds in every individual seat as well. So presumably there's a number of different ways we can look at what the betting is saying for the outcome. I mean, what are you currently seeing?
Yeah, it's been really, really interesting the last month or so. This time last month, the Tories and Labour were pretty much even in the betting in terms of who's going to win the largest number of seats. And the last month has seen pretty much one-way traffic in favour of the Tories on the betting markets. They're now fairly strong favourites at 4-7 to be the largest party. And the curious thing is that it's hard to fathom why that move would have occurred when the polls have been more or less flat for months now. Haven't really changed, notwithstanding a couple of recent good ones for the Tories. There's been virtually no movement, and most of the political science forecasting methods have built in an expectation that the polls will move gradually towards the Tories in the last couple of months, but that hasn't really been happening yet. So there's a puzzle here for us bookmakers as to why suddenly sentiment has moved so strongly in favour of the Conservatives.
So Rob, that's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, as Matt alludes to, we've seen a few YouGov polls and others recently that show the Conservatives ahead. But why do we think that the Conservatives might be getting the money in the betting, whereas the forecasts and the polls aren't necessarily, other than this first tranche this week, they don't seem to be moving that decisively towards them?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose one thing is possibly that people are thinking about, so a couple of months ago, Labour had pretty consistently 3-4% leads in the polls, but it sounds like we're probably relatively evens in terms of the betting markets. So there seems to be a certain drag in terms of what kind of lead you need and then what actually is happening in the betting markets, which could perhaps be part of it. A media narrative of, even if it's been the last week, I think we've probably had 10 or 12 polls which are pretty much split 50-50, but the media narrative is all about the three Tory leads that came out from pollsters. So there's a difference there between, if you like, the overall picture and then the way in which the media punctuates. And I think those are similar things. What you've also got is a lot of, even if we were talking to Chris a week ago, a lot of the models have shown a move to the Tories as well. They're very, very sensitive to changes in the polling. And as we know from Chris last week, a lot of the models suggest that there is likely to be a movement towards the Conservatives, never mind where they are at the polls at the moment, but because you expect people to sort of revert back to a more similar position to where they were in 2010 than they are currently. But also, betting markets are different. So you have different people doing betting than necessarily you have elsewhere. So I don't, that could have something to do with it as well. Perhaps the type of people that are betting are, in a sense, not necessarily themselves representative of the population as a whole in one way or another.
So Matt, let's explore that in more detail in terms of what the markets are saying, in terms of where the result might be going. Obviously, there's some forecasts out there. You've got a new projection yesterday, was it? Was it today? What does that seem to be saying?
Yeah, today we've seen a slight shift in one of the forecasts we produce, largely as a result of Ashcroft's latest round of polling. The way we've framed this particular forecast is we've simply looked at the odds in each individual constituency, the 632 British constituencies, and all we've done is count up the favourites. So what we've found from that is that Labour are favourites in 274 seats, in fact 274 and a half, because there's some joint favourites going on, and the Tories are two seats ahead of them on that projection. This is the first time we've had the Tories ahead on that measure. Labour have been further ahead in weeks gone by. Most of the movement has been from seats going from Labour into the SNP column, as more and more polling has backed up the reality of the SNP surge. There hasn't been a lot of movement between Labour and the Tories, though. In fact, there's some evidence that Labour are actually doing quite well outside of Scotland, relatively. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge host of seats which Labour won in 2005, the Tories gained in 2010, but in which Labour are now favourites to retake in May. These are mostly sort of small town English seats: Ipswich, Nuneaton,
Bedford,
Swindon, Keighley. Some actually sort of familiar electoral battlegrounds, as opposed to, you know, a lot of the excitement around this election has been around what UKIP going to do, what's going to happen in Scotland, how well or badly the Liberal Democrats will perform. But right now, it looks like the key result in this election as to who's going to get the most seats is going to come down to those kind of seats in England, which could really make the difference as to who's going to be in Downing Street.
And when you're updating your forecasting, to call it that, so you've alluded to sort of taking the polls into account, but presumably, what's different from a bookmaker to maybe people like Chris Hanratty, who we spoke to last week, is that you've also got to take the money into account, presumably, or do you? I mean, as an outsider, I look at the bookmakers and assume that if there's lots of money going on individual seats for the Conservatives or Labour, that gets factored into your forecast as well, or are you more often looking at the polling?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, but essentially bookmaking is a supply and demand industry. The more money that goes on a particular candidate, their odds will shorten up, inevitably. Although there is, you know, myself as the bookmaker sitting in the middle, they're having an opinion. So it isn't necessarily just the case that just because large amounts of money go on a candidate, they will definitely shorten up, because, you know, there are some clients of ours, if they have £10 on something, we'll change the price because we respect their opinion so much.
Right.
There are other people who could have thousands of pounds on them and we won't make a change. So it's not the same as a betting exchange, which is simply supply and demand.
Where's the money going?
Yeah, we've got our opinion sat in the middle there, which is also part of the makeup of the odds.
Rob, you've got the forecast in front of you. I mean, what do you make of it? I mean, just to read out some of these figures, if I've got them in front of me. So we've got Labour 27, again, bear in mind the decimal places, but Labour on 274.5, Conservatives a couple of seats ahead of that, the SNP on, you know, 42, 43. Lib Dems 30, UKIP sort of 3.5. Again, we bear in mind that these halves are generally to do with where there might be joint favourites in certain seats. But, I mean, we've been talking to, you know, Chris Hanratty and their team there recently. I mean, how do you think this sort of forecast tallies up with others? It feels quite similar.
Yeah, I think it's really pretty close. I think the interesting thing for me is first of all, is UKIP doing probably better on the market than in certainly most of the sort of models than the polling that I've seen. And it'd be interesting to think a little bit about why that might be. Suspect, for the sake of argument, that lots of the models which get very, it's quite difficult to do at a seat by seat level, often don't capture the full effect. So some of them may not yet have been updated to have Ashcroft's latest polling and so on. Suspect that UKIP, someone like Farage, probably got quite a lot of money going on him specifically in his seat that maybe is in a sense disproportionate to his chances of winning. I don't know whether that might have something to do with the fact that I think looking at the odds of him winning that sort of, I think they're quite, I always get this wrong, quite short odds for an event that I think might be a bit less likely than the bookmakers, but you know, I could be obviously very wrong about that. So I think only the UKIP ones, which look, I think, stronger, are probably the ones. What have we got the Greens on? I suppose they're just in with others.
Well, we've got them on one seat. The betting's forecasting they will hold Brighton Pavilion.
Yeah.
The one big chance looks like Bristol West now, which would be a disaster for Ladbrokes because they were 100-1 to win that seat when we first opened up the betting. They're now 7-2.
Any big bets on that one?
Well, it doesn't take many, does it? From what I hear, the National Party are going to be putting all their resources into Brighton and then Bristol, and then that's pretty much it. So other possibilities like Norwich South, if that's correct, are probably not going to happen for them this year.
Let's talk a bit more about UKIP. Rob alluded to Nigel Farage and UKIP a moment ago. I mean, you're seeing a lot of money on them. They're quite interesting, aren't they, in terms of what they might do?
Yeah, I mean, I think Farage's seat, Thanet South, is going to be the biggest betting heat of all the 650 constituencies based on what we've taken already. Now, I was talking to Matthew Goodwin yesterday, who some people will know wrote a very well-received book about UKIP, academic book about them last year. He was of the opinion that he was incredibly bullish about Farage's chances there. In fact, he was speculating that it probably isn't far away from both the Tories and the Labour Party pretty much giving up on this seat, pulling out because they saw this as being a foregone conclusion. Now, Farage has spent, from what I hear, an awful lot of time in this seat. They aren't going to spread him too thinly during the campaign because this is a key target for UKIP. They have to get Farage into the House of Commons, because if that doesn't happen, then that is a hugely damaging blow to their prospects going forward. So the betting reflects that. Now, he's 3-1 on, which for people who don't understand betting, implies he's got about a 75% chance of winning this seat. We're still seeing money for the Tories here at 3-1. Nobody's very keen on Labour anymore. But we've taken a fair amount of money on Al Murray, actually, at 66-1, although I'm reasonably confident he'll struggle to get more than 1 or 2%.
To be honest, I'll still be surprised if he actually genuinely does stand, but yeah. I might not be up to date on that. That's it. The start of Nigel Farage, Rob, I mean, that's quite interesting, isn't it? Ladbrokes seem to have him pretty much nailed on to win, but some of the polls have been quite ambiguous about that. I mean, although, I mean, personally, I would expect him to be in Parliament in May. What are your thoughts?
No, well, I mean, I think what we've just heard makes complete sense. I hadn't heard anything about people, in effect, giving up on it, but I certainly know that, you know, Farage has been... What's interesting there is that Farage has not been in the media as much and has been in the constituency, which I think has its own interesting dynamic in terms of potentially other seats where UKIP might have had more chance if they'd invested the resources and had Farage doing lots of visits.
They're not doing fantastic at the moment, are they?
No, but of course the thing for them is it was always a challenge of which seats can they actually win. So you have to pick them, and you know, you're probably pretty likely to pick the leader seat as one of those ones that you're going to put the investment into. I mean, that makes sense. But in terms of the models, you know, it takes a while for that to feed through. So I don't know when the last time Ashcroft did a Thanet South poll, but you know, you don't have a huge amount of polling to update these things. And of course, you know, lots of the polling models find, you know, UKIP really difficult to measure because, you know, in the last election in 2010, which a lot of these things take as, you know, the baseline, you know, UKIP were getting, I think I'm right saying, less than 5%, certainly well less than 5% of the vote nationwide, whereas, you know, it's more than plausible that that will be double that, and obviously, you know, they'll have majorities in at least some places.
So let's think about UKIP more generally. So the market seems to suggest 3.5, obviously you can't win 3.5 seats, but you know, 3-4 seats, I guess, in terms of how many they might pick up in May. I mean, I'll go back to you again, Rob. I mean, what do you think? That feels quite, that's quite different to some of these election forecast models, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was election forecast with Chris, I think last week had them on two or three. If you're looking at five, then that's quite different. But 3.5, I think, is well within the range of the ones that we might expect them to pick up. Obviously, if what would be interesting is to know how likely they are, even in the place where they're not favourite, which might well be, I think, higher than lots of the other models forecast. So once you get beyond the Thurrock, Thanet South, South Thanet, once you get beyond Clacton, and Rochester and Strood, where is it then that they're likely to pick up seats, where I suspect their odds might well be better than lots of the other sort of projection models have them?
I mean, we'll come on to how we might make money. I'm not sure Matt's going to want us to know. Let's look at some of the other seats. One of the ones that always strikes me is Nick Clegg. There's got, you know, if people are following Nigel Farage about a lot, then they're certainly going to be keeping an eye on Nick Clegg. I mean, Matt, what are your markets saying about his chances? Is it quite bullish?
Okay, well, Nick Clegg in Sheffield Hallam, he's 2-5 now, which says he's got around a 70% chance of holding on. The polls have been fairly close. In fact, he was a lot shorter. In other words, the market was much more certain of his position a couple of months ago. And the odds for Labour have come in there. They're only 15 to 8 now. So every chance there could be a shock there. I mean, I know Labour are supposedly going to be trying very, very hard to pin him down in that seat, which makes some sense tactically, even if you don't win. If you're using up his time trying to hold on to his seat, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, I expect he'll hold on, but not a certainty, and it would be fascinating to see a leadership contest which would have to ensue if he does get defeated.
Yeah, I mean, Rob, this is quite interesting, isn't it? Because the polls are and probably the best weapon you've got other than instinct in terms of how you might try and take on the betting markets and make some cash out of the election. They're quite ambiguous about Nick Clegg, aren't they? I mean, logically, one would expect it's very surprising that he loses his seat, but it's by no means that certain, is it, that he keeps that he holds on?
Yeah, I mean, so I think I'm right in saying that when you project from the national polls onto a seat like Sheffield Hallam in the north of England, it looks like a right bet for Labour in terms of where the vote was in 2010, in terms of the type of the electorate, the type of seat, and so on. What I think is harder when you're projecting from the national picture onto the constituency is that impact of it being a national leader who is going to be, you know, in the media, and there is a slightly different dynamic that often happens. It also doesn't necessarily take into account, as Matt was saying, how much time and effort either the Labour Party or the Liberal Democrats are going to spend in terms of resources disproportionately on that seat versus others. So I think the fact that perhaps, if I read this correctly, the betting markets are, in a sense, slightly more bullish about Clegg's chances than the polls might suggest, then that makes a lot of sense to me.
Let's think more about, I mean, people will be eagerly after tips, I guess, in terms of how they play the market. And Matt, I'm not trying to bankrupt your company. I'd struggle, to be honest with you, I imagine. But, I mean, what's your advice? Where's the good value, do you think, in terms of how people might want to approach political betting? Because, I mean, presumably, you're not going to make a great deal of money out of, you know, betting on Nigel Farage or the Conservatives to be the biggest party, or Labour to be the biggest party, or something like that. So, I mean, what are the tricks of the trade, if there are any?
Well, there are a huge range of options for you here. I mean, for instance, on UKIP's prospects, Matthew Goodwin did make a prediction that he thought 6 would be the most likely number for their seat wins. Now, you can actually bet on the exact number of UKIP seats, 10-1 that they win exactly 6, so a few people have followed his advice there. More broadly, if you're interested in backing the Tories, then the best option actually to look at some of the seat betting. Some of the seats where they're marginal outsiders, the places we were discussing earlier, they must be good value there. If they're such good, big favourites to be the largest party, then these are the kind of seats they should be winning, and yet there's still odds against there. So that's the value for on the Tory side. If you want to back Labour, then I think most of the value actually in the betting markets right now on pro-Labour options, just backing them at 5-4, 11-8 to be the biggest party seems like fairly good value to me at the moment, given that most of the forecasting models are saying this is going to be very, very close.
And I mean, Rob, I don't think you're a big gambler, but like we use the term smart bet loosely. I mean, where do you think the kind of smart money is? Not necessarily who you think is going to win, but just, I mean, what do you think would be a clever thing to look at?
So looking just at these top 10 seats by betting interest, I think Bradford West looks quite interesting. I'm quite surprised that Galloway isn't more of a favourite there. I know that he won it in a by-election, but as I understand it, Labour have now reselected their candidate. There seems, if I read these right, and Labour are the narrow favourites for that seat, then I think that's a reasonably interesting prospect.
So just people listening in here, so we've got Labour at 4-5, and then Respect, George Galloway, obviously, Evans, Conservatives at 50-1. So yeah, I suppose if you were relatively confident of George Galloway, you might.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not a huge amount, but you know, I think they look like interesting odds. I think Matt's point about if the difference between you know, what if you think of the seats that Tories need to win a majority and think of betting there. I also think there's reasonable value if you take the view that the SNP will not do quite as well as some of the polling suggests at the moment. That there could be some good value in, you know, Labour holding on to Scottish seats, where at the moment the betting markets are going against them. But I haven't seen the odds for those specific ones. I imagine up until relatively recently, there was a view that the SNP was going to win a lot of seats, but then when you looked at the specific markets, Labour was still favourites. The idea, for instance, until recently, that Gordon Brown's seat in Kirkcaldy and Cowdenbeath was in any way likely to fall to the SNP, I think people would have laughed at. So, but I imagine now the S&P are favourites. I don't know if you know off the top of
your
head.
Yeah, I do. I mean, those sorts of move today. That's now one of the seats where the joint favourites lay with the S&P.
Right.
Can't pick the winner there. Incredible, as you say. I mean, the S&P were 33-1 to win this seat before the referendum. They're now pretty much evens. Just coming back to your point about Bradford West, I think that's a great spot. I think Galloway should be favourite here. I mean, it was a terrible result for us when he won his by-election. We really didn't see that coming. We lost a lot of money on that when he won. He didn't just win, he won by miles. And so even money about him holding on, given the problems Labour have got in that seat, yeah, I agree. I think that's one of the best bets around at the moment.
But a huge problem in terms of getting information about it. You know, it's one seat. There is no national respect picture that you can map onto it. So, you know, very, very hard.
If Ashcroft spends his own money holding it, then, you know, we're none the wiser.
Which
really
I think is unlikely for several reasons.
it strikes me, Matt, that actually, we kind of alluded to it earlier, that the way to make money on betting on politics is to kind of spot the trend ahead of time a little bit. So we talked about the S&P, you know, and we've talked about before how Chris Amrati's model and his team's model sort of picked that up quite early. So I suppose, you know, looking ahead, what we just speculating here amongst ourselves, you know, what do we think are the trends that we might actually see in the next year that could be worth putting money on? I mean, there's a couple off the top of my head I could think of. You know, despite all the caveats John Curtis had on whether there could be two elections in one year, I mean, that could be quite interesting. I was reading the Evening Standard on the way here today, and it talked about Boris Johnson potentially being Prime Minister by like November in the event that he was the leader of the Conservative Party and there was a second election or something like that. So presumably that's the kind of thing that's going to catch the bookies out, so to speak.
Well, two elections, actually, there's a price on that. It's 4-1, there'll be two this year. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the more voting there is, the better. but I don't think it's all that likely myself. I mean, even if we get the kind of results that we're forecasting here with a huge sort of messy outcome, there's not that much time. And we know we had two elections in 1974, but the first one was in February and the second in October. And obviously the Fixed-Term Parliament Act makes it much more difficult than it used to be. One quite popular sort of speciality choice has been the idea that we'll get a situation where Labour get fewer votes but more seats than the Conservatives. That's only a 3-1 shot. I mean, the window there's probably getting narrower for that particular outcome given what's happening in Scotland, but that's something a lot of people have latched onto in the last month or so.
He may have laid that bet, but I know Mike Smithson from Political Betting was a big believer in that a long time ago in terms of that eventuality.
As I say, I think the window for that was probably around 3%, you know, anything up to a 3% Tory lead in the past, but that's probably at least halved, I would have said now, given that Labour aren't going to win that many seats in Scotland by the looks of things.
Mm. And Rob, I mean, you know, leaving the odds to one side maybe, I mean, what do you think, kind of getting your crystal ball out, looking at some of the eventualities that might come to pass. I mean, we don't have to say this will happen, but
no.
You know, it's about the money's to be made in the kind of speculation, I suppose.
Well, sort of going back to the idea of a second election, maybe not this year, I agree completely with Matt, I think it's unlikely this year, but if we do have a messy outcome, an election in a short period of time, I think one of the things that would be interesting for me, and that, you know, I don't know whether there is a market in this, but actually how many second places people get. If you imagine a situation in which the Greens go from one seat and, as far as I'm aware, no other second place finishes, to two seats, but, I don't know, four or five second places, within striking distance of several places, Norwich South, the rest of it. UKIP going from very, very few second place finishes in 2010, if any, I can recall. Matt's not shaking his head. To, you know, six seats and, I don't know, you know, we talk about, you know, all sorts of permutations there. 80, 90 second place is not, you know, would be a very, very high end. But even so, you then in striking distance.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility.
It's not totally beyond the realms of possibility. So what that then sets as the stage for the next election, I think, is really, really interesting. There's some amazing stat about how many seats the SDP came in 1983 and how little implication that had for the election after that. I have a suspicion that might not be the case this time around.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't think 80 or 90 UKIP second places by any means unlikely. I think there's going to be at least 60 or 70 they're going to get in Labour seats in the north of England, and they could transform a lot of these previously safe, boring from a betting point of view seats into actually quite competitive ones. Places like Hartlepool, Rotherham, Hayward, Workington. There's a lot of fertile territory from up there, and I know that the Labour Party are extremely worried about this in the long term.
Okay, well, let's move on to our sort of finding of the week, and I think that, you know, make an executive decision here that there is really only one, given Lord Ashcroft's polling that was released yesterday and some of the talk around just how well the SNP would do in Scotland. We've seen this SNP surge. It's undeniable now. We obviously spoke on this podcast with John Curtis about it. But then there was some sort of thought when the last tranche of Scottish seats was released that these were just in yes areas. So actually, you know, when you release some other seats, you know, the story would be less stark. But if anything, the swing away from Labour seems to be as strong, if not stronger, in some of the no seats. Likewise, we've seen in the battleground in England, as Matt alluded to earlier, actually Labour doing pretty well. So, I mean, Rob, what's your take on some of that polling last night?
So Ashcroft's polling is interesting, but I'd say it's more interesting for reinforcing a series of narratives that we're already familiar with in terms of the SNP surge, which isn't really a surge anymore given it's been documented now for quite a long time. It also had, interestingly reflecting some of the conversations we were having earlier, High Peak and Rossendale and Darwin are seats which are pretty, I mean, they're obviously on Labour's target list, but if you had a uniform national swing and seeing the kind of results that you were seeing there, you would expect Labour to be picking up a lot more seats than Ashcroft is actually doing as his central prediction, which I think I'm right in saying is 274-ish.
I think, yes, although to use that usual caveat, I don't think it's his projection so much as just that this is what the sum of all the parts are that he's polled. But anyway, you know, he's not here.
but if it is 274, and I think he was saying basically it's a dead heat, I think was his net result. It'd be interesting to know what the odds are on that, Matt.
That sounds like a good one, Matt.
Yeah, 33-1 on Labour and the Tories coming out with a dead heat in terms of seat numbers. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I don't think the Ashcroft polling actually did change very much in terms of the betting. It slightly increased the expectation for the SNP. For what we're constantly being told is the most unpredictable election ever. In fact, there's actually a lot of unanimity among the various forecasting methods, the pollsters, the political scientists, the bookmakers. We're all coming up with figures in pretty much the same area, i.e. it's going to be very close in terms of seat numbers. Yeah. Tories may get slightly more votes. Liberal Democrats getting somewhere around high 20s, early 30s. It's certainly very close, but we've got more information than we've ever had before, certainly because of what Ashcroft's been doing in constituency polls. So in some ways, it should be more predictable than we've ever had before.
Well, shamelessly plug an article that I wrote for the general election website for the LSE last week. I suppose that what this depends on is the polling being right. And we probably have biggest chance of a 1992 situation where polls just get it wrong than we've maybe ever had. Not because there's anything wrong with the polling per se, but just because it's so close, and you know, a point out here or there in the national vote share could have massive implications for some of these swing seats. And you know, if we do get those shy Tories again, underestimating the Conservative vote share, I mean, we could end up in a situation where maybe the polls say 2 or 3 point Tory lead, but actually it's 5 or 6, and that's very different. I mean, Rob, what do you think? I mean, on the other hand, actually, there's a lot of work that goes into this since 1992, isn't there? So maybe that's wrong.
I suppose my view would be the most reliable number is actually the national vote share number. The complicating factor in terms of everything else is about what that maps onto in terms of the battleground. So disproportionate swing from, well, as we're seeing in Scotland, you know, that's affecting the Labour story, much higher swing from Tories to Labour, or at least through the effect of UKIP from Tories to Labour in the north of England versus the south of England, in the kinds of places that are actually quite marginal seats. And then what happens in those Lib Dem held seats in the southwest, and how many of those the Tories can mop up. I think those three effects, which are in a sense local, are probably going to have a much bigger effect and are really hard to measure in comparison with for the sake of argument, we have on election day, it says it's going to be 35, 32 Tories Labour, and it ends up being, you know, the other way around with a much bigger margin or something, mm-hmm. Which is more or less what happened in 92, obviously with different numbers. but I think it's much more likely that the way in which the national vote share translates into seats is likely to be complicated and perhaps distorted from what everybody's sort of central projections are, than that the actual vote share figures as a whole are going to be wrong.
So Matt, I mean, to close, I mean, presumably, I would imagine with uncertainty comes a lot of interest with the betting markets. I mean, how do you anticipate this election being for you? Is it the biggest election betting-wise ever, do you think, or is it pretty much the same as before?
Well, we're extremely confident this is going to be the biggest ever political betting market, in fact, the biggest ever non-sports betting market we've ever seen. The Scottish referendum previously had that title last year. We took an enormous amount of money there. Based on what we've seen already and comparing it to 2010, we think it'll be somewhere around two or three times as big as the volume of money we took back then.